I want to know why something that a person can't have, he wants more. Something that a person's reach, he wants. Something that a person can't.
You mean why the drive? Oh. To have something that is not in your
reach.
Yeah. More than something that what you have in your reach, yeah, you don't have to strive. What should I say? The character is called, in Lashon HaKodesh, we call it Midos. What's the word Midos? You know, in Hebrew, you know what Midos means in Hebrew? Measurements. Why? Because there is no tendency that a human being has which is not necessary. A person, let's say, an appetite is a tendency. Hunger is a tendency. And not only hunger is a tendency, a person develops a taste for a certain thing and he likes it. It's necessary. It's a life necessity. If a person who doesn't have an appetite should go and see a doctor. A person should have a striving for food, for tasty food. It could also be. So what's wrong with it? When somebody becomes a glutton, it's wrong. Why? Because the tendency is needed, but within a limit. If you go over the limit, then it becomes negative. Is it clear what I say? Huh? I think it's clear. The drive that a person has for possessions is a good tendency. A person should. Now, whether a drive should have, whether the drive should be limitless, this is also a necessity, but not a social necessity, not an individual necessity. The Rambam says, if not for people who act insanely, the world would not be built up. And he says, a man has worked to earn money. At his time it was hard, and because big money is only, cannot be earned locally. Big money is always, has to have a greater area, greater markets. Now today when you have a communication, it's not so hard. But at the Rambam's time, if somebody wanted to do some international business, he had to travel. Huh? There were no Concords yet. Huh? And traveling was on boats most. Trains were on teeter, so the best on boats. And the boats were not the Queen Elizabeth yet. So the Rambam gives you a picture of a man who spent most of his healthy years on high seas. You know what the high seas means? The halacha in Shulchan Aruch, that if at that time you should not sail on a boat later than Tuesday. Why? Because there is a good probability you'll have an emergency, and that emergency may be on Shabbos. And all hands on board and you have to do something. So to put yourself in a position where you'll be first to work on Shabbos, and you'll have to save lives. The last 3 days before Shabbos, you should already be conscious that not to put yourself in such a position. So this is what traveling on boats meant at that time. Now, when that man, how did he amass money? He amassed money by traveling. He says the man didn't enjoy a day of his life. And then he's already an old man, has a lot of money to do with money. So he decides he'll build some big buildings. Who are going to use those buildings? He doesn't have a life expectancy to inaugurate them. For whom did that man work all his life? He worked for society that they should have buildings built. And you know what the Rambam says? And the Rambam says, if not for people who act insanely, we wouldn't have nothing built up. So therefore, that drive, to become big is really a social necessity, not a personal necessity. On the other hand, the Gemara says, if somebody has 100, he tries to reach 200. Yesh le Messiah, when he has 200, Reutze Abameh, he tries to reach for 400. The more he reaches, the higher becomes his goal. Fine. One thing it's necessary, because that drive is building up social needs. But then it's something else. 100 what? If somebody has $100, he wants $200. If he has $200, he wants $400. How is about he has 100 blood gemore? If he has 100 blood gemore, he possesses 100 blood gemore, he really wants another 100. And if he has 200 blood gemore, he wants 400. So that drive, it could be for physical possessions, could be for personal development. So this is what the Rebbe Shlom gave us, that a person should constantly develop himself. So somebody is lucky and he applies it to 100 blood gemore. Somebody is not as lucky, applies it to $100, it's also fine. In the meantime, he built something up. But if you ask, why is that tendency? That's the tendency. So character, we call midas. Because there are certain things a person should know, there is a limit. Meaning it. It says, the Medrash, it's another area, but let me tell you. The Medrash says, when a person is doing something good, do it full-heartedly. Because if Aaron would have known, when Moshe Rabbeinu was traveling from Midian, the first time to Egypt, to Mitzrayim. And on the way in the desert, he had his first revelation, and he's giving his mission to go to Egypt and to take the people out. He is told by Hashem, go, there is an older brother of yours, Aaron, in Egypt. When he'll see you, he will really enjoy it. Says the Medrash, if Aaron would have known that the Torah will record that he will enjoy meeting his brother, he would come out with an orchestra to meet him. What does the Medrash mean? I'll tell you what the Medrash means. In the Torah, there is nothing recorded which is time-limited. Every statement in the Torah is timeless. Now, if the Torah tells you that Moshe Rabbeinu was told, when you come to Egypt, your brother will meet you and he'll enjoy it, there is something to it. What is it? I'll tell you what it is. Moshe Rabbeinu is offered a mission, a great mission. The greatest which was offered to a human being was the mission to Moshe Rabbeinu, right? But Moshe Rabbeinu has an older brother. And that brother may have bad feelings why the younger brother was picked up. He's not ready to accept it. As great the mission is, but we can't hurt another person. He can't hurt the feelings of his brother. So Moshe Rabbeinu was not ready to accept his mission because he may hurt the feelings of his brother. But Hashem told him, your brother will meet you and he'll rejoice it. You'll be happy about it. There was nothing standing in Moshe Rabbeinu's way. He accepted it. So therefore, the fact that the Aaron was happy and was not jealous on his brother gave us Moshe Rabbeinu until today. It's a timeless action. You follow what I say? It's timeless. Imagine what would happen if Moshe Rabbeinu would not have accepted the mission. We don't know what it would happen. So what we have today, Torah's Moshe, is just because Aharon was not jealous. Therefore, it's recorded in the Torah. Because this is a timeless effect. So then the Gemara says, the Midrash says, when a person does something, do it full-heartedly. You have no idea how far-reaching would be your action. Take a look. Aaron is just happy with his brother selecting. Did he realize that this gave us Moshe Rabbeinu for all times? That's what the Medrash says. When you do something, do it full-heartedly, because if you do something good, you don't know how far the effect will be. But here, we learn about Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu is offered the greatest mission a human being could have. He has an older brother, and before he is assured that he would not hurt his brother's feelings, he's not ready to accept it. This is a person limiting himself. Limitations. This is what's called midos, measurements. That a person should have you have tendencies. Certainly you have a tendency, you want to, if a great mission is given to you, you want to take it. but as much as you want, you may hurt somebody else's feelings. This is the limit. So, the Rabban Shem gave the human being tendencies. He should want everything. Then he has to figure out where to put the line. Now, did I answer your question on that?
Yeah, so is the Rav saying that the reason why God gave that tendency was in order to build the world?
He wants, the Rabban Shlom did, he plans, it says, Man de yoiv chaye yoiv mesine. The one who gave you life will give you also your means to exist. The Rabban Shlom created the human being as a part of a society. Therefore, and who makes the society? The individuals, right? So therefore, in the nature of the individual are all tendencies for individual development and for social development. I think it's clear. So, did I answer your question? Huh? All right, so now the next question.
I just wanted the Rav to just please say a few words about happiness.
Huh?
To say about
happiness. Yeah. I'll tell you, this is, we should understand that, take such a thing like food. What is the function of taste? The function of food we know. The function of food is nourishment. Huh? But why do we have to have taste? Now we just read the Shabbos that the rattlesnake was cursed, that he will have no taste in what he eats. You'll eat dust all your life, he said. You will have no taste, but you'll have to eat. So, why? What is the function of taste?
To make it pleasant.
Huh?
To make it pleasant, palatable.
Yeah.
To make it so you'll eat it.
Yeah. Let me tell you, when we bench after eating food, and then there's in the fourth book we say, Hatoiv v'hameitiv, the one who is good and the one who acts goodly. What is that repetition? Hatoiv, the one who is good, v'hameitiv, and the one who acts goodly. I think this is exactly about food. If I wouldn't have food, I would starve. So the Rabban Shlom provided me food. Did he have to give me a sweet tasting? I have to support myself. I have to eat. Like the snake. He has to eat. Doesn't taste. But not only he is good to me that he gives me nourishment, he is acting goodly by making the nourishment tasty and pleasant. Huh? Is it clear? So therefore, when I eat food, what is the function? Nourishment. There is a pleasant side effect that they enjoy eating it. This is what happiness is. Happiness is always a result, a side effect, of following natural functions. And this is why there was an English philosopher, I think the name is Stuart Mill. He said, happiness is a strange thing. You never reach it when you're after it. But it meets up with you when you're not after it. And this is exactly the reason. If I eat for taste, I spoil my teeth. I build up a belly like mine. And not only this, with the time, my appetite becomes dull. I'm used to, then I need spicier food. Even my taste becomes dull. But if I need just to nourish myself, that's the function. The pleasure comes by itself. The only thing is, a person shouldn't think, I know, my father Zechayim Nevoch said about the Chofetz Chaim, says by Moshe Rabbeinu, a title, Eved Hashem, God's slave. What kind of a title is it to be a slave? What's the title to be a slave? It says, what a slave means, a slave does not live for himself. He lives for his master. He is not his own property, he is his master's property. Today we don't have slavery, but when there was slavery, a slave was property. Is it clear? If it's property, the right is that he lives for his master. His function, he has to live in order to can do some work for his master. He doesn't have a slave, doesn't live for himself, he lives for the master. This is Moshe Rabbeinu did not live for himself. Everything he did was because Hashem wants to do that. So that's the title of Eved Hashem. So my father Zechayim Nevoch said, that title, he says, he can say, and Chofetz Chaim. Chofetz Chaim says, never did something for his personal. He did because this is his function, his obligation to do. You understand? It's wonderful. But you can't expect everybody to be like the Chofetz Chaim. Therefore, there is a parsha in Chumash. When you hire a man to pick fruit in your garden, he is entitled, while he's working on the fruit, he's entitled to take an apple or whatever it is, or a grape, to put in his mouth. That's not his function. His function is to pick the fruit for the owner. But a human being is a human being. The same that Tere says about an animal. Don't muzzle up an animal when the animal is threshing food. Because when he sees food, he wants to take in his mouth. The Tere says it. If somebody muzzles up his animal, when the animal works on eatable fruit, produce. He's Chayim Malkus. You know what's Chayim Malkus? Trading on lashes. But the same what the Torah says about an animal, the Torah says about a human being, a person is working and food. You can't stop him from putting something in his mouth. So this is a symbol that even a person who is not the Chofetz Chaim, we are here for our functions, but here and there, if we do something for our own enjoyment, it's also not bad, as long as we don't go overboard. Is it clear what I say? But happiness is a reward of exercising our functions. The same as taste is a reward of nourishing us. Are you happy now? All right, we still have time, I think. Yes, we have plenty of time. Yes.
You learn that you have to always give to other people. You always have to give to everyone as much as you can give. When is that time that you do take? And what is the intention of taking?
Yeah, I'll tell you. First, we have to understand that a human being has been created as but a producer and consumer. And that his consumption should come as a result of his production. Therefore, my relation with other people, if two people, let's say in a marriage, here's a man and a woman starting a family. Now, each one is giving and each one is getting, right? Now, if those two people are getters, are takers, so each one is concerned what they can get out of the other one. If those people are givers, each one is concerned what can he do to make the other person happy. You see the difference? It's a difference between hell and paradise. The relations among people, it's the same thing. We are always giving and taking. But if I am concerned about giving, I am happy and I make the other person happy. If I am concerned about taking, I make the other person miserable and I don't make myself less miserable. It's as simple as that. Is it clear? Did I answer you? I did. So then we are free for another question.
Stored in one's anger, impulse to anger, holding yeah. Myself back at the right time.
The question is what the function of anger?
Could be both.
Huh?
Holding yourself back with the function of it.
Because anger, a person has to avoid. I was coming here in a taxi. So that fellow has a little in front of him, always smile. And he's right. A person who makes himself, controls himself, always has a smile, enjoys himself, and is a pleasure to everyone. That's what they can think. The Taylor says, no compassion. Why? Because my anger at him is compassion with all my brothers. If a person is endangering society, I should be angry at him. But the anger comes out of my compassion with the victims. So I think just for such occasions, the Benson created anger.
You said compassion is a gift. Compassion, is it from Torah? Does it come from Torah? Compassion is a natural... I don't want to acquire compassion. It's a hard thing for everybody to have.
What is the word compassion? What is the word compassion? In Yiddish it's Rachmanis. In Hebrew it's Rachmim. Rachmanis. It means that I share in somebody else's pain. That's compassion. So maybe, and this is true, if I see a fellow is the Rodif. Or if somebody is endangering another person. Sometimes I should even kill him. And then afraid of that if you have to save the life of the one who's persecuted, you kill him. If you can do it in other ways, then you're a murderer and you kill him. But if you can do otherwise, you kill him too. So you kill him not because you want to murder. You kill him because you want to save the victim. That's compassion. Yes, sir.
Don't steal the place. When one's friend is in need of help, one enemy is also in need of help.
When one's friend is
in need of assistance or help at a particular a given moment in time.
Yeah.
The loading of the cart and the donkey. You're supposed to be obliged to help your enemy, are you not, first? Before your friend. By helping your enemy before your friend, it would be like from my limited knowledge I'd see conquering the Yetzirah. But at the same time, where does the compassion come into it? You came off your friend, you want to help your enemy.
Yes.
Is it
you refer to a Gemara that you learned?
I didn't learn it, I saw it somewhere.
Yeah, I understand. It says, here is what the Gemara says. The Mishnah says, two people need a hand. One needs to help him unload his animal. The animal is overloaded and he has to take up some weight, some load for him. Now I am helping the man, I am also helping the animal. Huh? Now another fellow needs to load his animal. If I'm going to help him, I'm not helping the animal. I'm not hurting either, because as long as it is loading in a normal volume, I'm not hurting the animal. But I am not helping the animal either, but I am helping the man who needs loading. So if you have a case like this, and there are two people, one needs help to give him a hand in loading, one needs to give him a help in unloading. whom should he, who takes priority? What would you say? You had a case.
No.
Huh? Here he is in the street, and two drivers are there. One drives an animal, and the animal is overloaded, and he has to take off some stuff from him. And the other one stands with, and he's just loading up his animal, and he needs a help. Whom should I give a help? The unloading. Why? Because I'm helping the man and helping the animal. Says the Mishnah, this is only if those drivers, you have no personal feelings for the drivers, and you're doing it. But if one of them is your friend, and the other one you hate, the priority is help the one you hate. Fight your Yetzirah. So therefore, Dick takes priority over helping the animal. Is it clear what I say?
Does it mean that you help?
There are two drivers standing with the animal. There's a man who needs loading. That man happens to be, I hate him, I can't stand him. But he needs loading. My best friend is over there and he's unloading. So unloading should take priority, no? Say no. Fight your character. Why do you hate him? Make yourself a friend. Become a friend. So this takes priority over pity on the animal. Is it clear what I say?
Jew or non-Jew?
Pardon?
Jew or non-Jew? Or the respect?
I think it would be the same.
Same thing.
I am not sure. I have not learned it, but I think it would be the same. Now the question is, if one is a Jew, one is a non-Jew, then would be a question. Because for the Jew I have greater responsibilities. And you know why? I'll tell you why. Because social responsibilities should have a reciprocity. Now what I am obligated to you should be such a thing that when I am in trouble, you'll be obligated to help me. Now, that non-Jew doesn't have the mitzvah of helping to load. Therefore, there is no reciprocity in it. And the Jew has, then the Jew is first because there is a reciprocity. Is it clear what I say? Huh? So, let me give you an illustration. Yes?
But you shouldn't be doing a mitzvah because of your own reciprocation. You should be doing it because it's a mitzvah to help him.
Right. So therefore?
So you're not doing it because the Jew's got a mitzvah to help you back.
But logically, it's not because of my interests, but my obligations are stronger where there is a reciprocity. So therefore, that man is mechuyev to me, I am mechuyev to him. My obligation is a stronger obligation. The other one is more voluntary. But let me give you an illustration. Yeah, I have time. The law of interest. A person comes to me for a loan. I cannot, if he's a Jew, I cannot charge him interest. You know, all the problem that has today with to go around to find ways that you can pay interest to a Jew. Let's say the Jewish banks, Jewish savings and loans, you have here in, especially here in Israel. there are certain ways, certain legal ways that is made that we can pay interest, or we can take interest. Now it says in Chumash, Lanochi Tashich, the Nanju, you shall take interest. If I can't take interest, I can't take interest. What's the difference between the Jew and the non-Jew? Huh? Here's the question. But let me understand it. A man comes to me, he wants $1,000 for 2 months. I say, I'll gladly give you, but my $1,000 are not idling. I keep them in investing, and they are always producing for me. So I don't want you to pay me for doing the favor, but I don't want to lose out either. I want to be compensated. My loss, I have a loss of potential. My $1,000 have a certain potential of producing money in 2 months. He says, I can't. Right? Tera says you can't give interest. I say, fine. Without interest, I'll have a loss. And interest, you can't give me. Go someplace else, look for a loan. I can't give you a loan. So what would be the result? The result would be that instead of doing a favor to the poor fellow, the poor fellow would be happy to pay interest and have the cash which he needs. He can't. So what did the Torah do? Hear my question? I'll tell you. There is another mitzvah. If a man comes to you for a loan, you can't say no. All you can do is investigate if the loan is secure. If it's not secure, you are not obligated to give. But if the loan is secure, it's your obligation to give it. Now if that poor fellow comes to me and I say, I want you to compensate for the potential of my money. He says, I can't. And then I'll say, all right, I wouldn't give you a loan. I'll say, what's the mean you wouldn't give? The Torah says, you just investigate where it's secure, and then you have to give me. I have to give him that loan. As long as it's secure. You follow? So what did the Torah do? The Torah made me lose a potential of earning in order to help the other fellow. That's really what the Torah does. The Torah says, if he wants a loan, if it's secure, give him, and you have to give him, and don't charge him interest. So, which means it's at my expense. Huh? You understand? Now, if I'll come to an Anjou, and I say, I cannot pay you interest. Will you give me a loan? Huh? He doesn't have the obligation, but the Jew has. He wouldn't give me a loan. Are you understand? He doesn't have that obligation to go into an expense, to go into a loss in order to help me. I have an obligation against the other Jew. But he doesn't have it. Therefore, all social laws have to have a reciprocity. There should be a balance. Now, if he doesn't have to lose a potential because of me, I cannot be aggregated to lose a potential because of him. Therefore, when he comes to you for a loan, give him that loan, but charge him interest, just as to compensate for your potential. Is this clear? And that's what the Torah says, Lanochi Tisha. Give him a loan and charge him. He can't expect you to give him a loan without the interest, because you're losing. And if it would be the case, you'll come to him, he wouldn't be obligated. So there has to be a balance. Huh? The same thing with unloading and unloading. Now I have a question. Huh? My question is, we have 4 minutes, what do we do with them?
That's a quick question, it only takes 3 minutes to answer.
Huh?
Question should only take 2 minutes to answer. I've been in this country about 3 months now.
Pardon?
About 3 months I've been here.
Yes.
And I look in the newspaper,
yeah,
and I see on the pages pictures,
yeah,
about a road and rocks being thrown. And I don't understand why things like this happen. If throwing a rock could kill somebody. So I don't understand how things like this...
Maybe those people don't understand either. I don't know.
I don't know. I thought you could explain it.
But let me tell you something. If it would be a Pesach in Chumash, I don't understand it. My problem, I have to understand it. If somebody acts foolishly, and I don't understand it. It's not a tragedy not to understand.
Okay.
No? Yeah. You used up 1 minute. No, I'll tell you. We cannot judge people. All we can do is we can decide how we should behave. This is an action which I would like to copy. This is an action which I would not copy. This is all. But judge people, let me tell you something. Psychologically, there is a weakness in it. Why? Every person has a desire to be a great man. How great? How do you measure greatness? You measure with the next fellow. Greater than the other man. Right? Now, in order to be greater than the other man, I can achieve it in 2 ways. Either I raise myself or I push him down. So the tendency of criticizing people is, it's my ego. I build up my ego by criticizing other people. So, we don't criticize people. But on the other hand, we have to know what we can copy, what is not necessary to copy. So. Yes. Good.
Are we capable of doing tokacha though today, or?
Pardon?
Are we capable of administering tokacha today, and are we still chayav to try to rebuke a person, or are we at a level where we're incapable of doing it?
I didn't understand. What's the question? Let somebody repeat it. Yeah, did you hear the question? What's the question?
Are we today capable, yeah, of giving rebuke? Can we give rebuke today?
Oh, yeah, I'll tell you. Yes, but rebuke doesn't mean just to blame people. Just to tell people you are not good. That's very bad. That's not good. Rebuke people means to act so to correct him. Huh? To correct him sometimes correcting people is just learning with them. You know, I'll tell you from my own experience. I came to an area where people were Mechal Shabbos. And fine, with a good intention. There was a man who was driving his father every Shabbos to shul. He thought that's kibbutz. That's paying respect to his father, you understand? If I would tell him this, he wouldn't listen to me. So what did I do? I made him to start learning. Learning Torah shapes a person. After a while, he stopped by himself. I had people who told me, you never told me to start to observe Shabbos. You never told it to me, but I am observing Shabbos. Because Torah does it. No, that's the mitzvah of Techocha. The mitzvah of Techocha rebuking is not to say you're a bad fellow. Act in such a way and that he'll better himself. It's my concern, I'm bettering him. Thank you.
Good. 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 Good.